I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is Spoke, the all-new and exclusive podcast series with me, Chidera, a.k.a. The Slum Flower.
And me, Sully Breaks, poet, writer, spoken word, artist, etc., etc.
Where we discuss issues at the heart of youth culture and how music and literature are shaping the conversation. Young people today live in uncertain times. With tuition fee rises and zero-hour contracts on the rise, low prospects of owning a home and huge job insecurity, the future can often look pretty bleak.
And in the time of fake news, young people are turning to their favourite artists, obviously, for guidance.
Artists like Stormzy, JME and Lily Allen have proved that by using their platform, they can enact change and start debate. Indeed, of the 58% of Grime fans who voted Labour in 2017, 24% said that Grime for Corbyn influenced their vote.
But the real question is, should we really be turning to celebrities for all our news, you know what I mean? Do artists have a responsibility to be political, or is Theresa May really, as my guy Stormzy put it, a pagan?
In this show, we're discussing the impact youth culture has over today's politics and the responsibility artists have to enact change.
Change.
Yeah, fam. Yeah, so I think part of why, you know, Theresa May is definitely seen as a pagan, and I say that with my full entire chest and diaphragm, is because, you know, recent events have shown that she's not as committed to what she presented herself to be committed to, e.g. Grenfell, where she literally had minimal involvement and displayed very little empathy towards the situation. And I think that was the time when we really, really needed her. And she didn't show up. And I think that resentment is probably what's carried us through the rest of the year and has definitely changed the way that we approach politics as young people. What do you think?
100%. I feel like the whole situation basically is like representation in it. People are looking to someone who's supposed to be a leader, who's supposed to be at the forefront of government. I'm not a massive person into politics, but Theresa's supposed to be at the forefront. She's supposed to be the person ushering the country into a new age. Is that too dramatic? Mm. Is that a dramatic statement?
I don't think
isn't
it's
it?
Dramatic, but then I think did we have our hopes up too high for her?
I don't think anyone really wanted her to be.
No, I'm just being honest. She arrived one day and was like, "Hey everyone, I'm in."
So that's what happens. You get what I'm saying? So now if you're coming in and you're taking that position, it's kind of like you better deliver, or you better at least show some kind of awareness of the responsibility or the role of the people you've taken on board. You know what I mean? Because it was a hung parliament. Is that the term, hung parliament? Is that the term?
I think it was a hung parliament.
You know, so the parliament was hanging and she just jumped in and swooped in and stopped it from hanging. Grabbed that. I'm trying to go for the metaphors. Remember last week?
Yeah.
Within this whole poetry thing, innit? she came, she swooped in and she kind of like, she's under-delivering because she hasn't justified her claim to the throne. I think there's a Game of Thrones theme for this one.
Usher, New Age, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you don't know, Sully is an absolute major fan of Game of Thrones, and we've spent ages talking about Game of Thrones.
A real fan. Like back, I got it before, you know, all the hype. You know, I know certain people jumped on it when the hype was there, but you know, I got it when, you know, it was still, my boy gave it to me on a CD. You know, so that shows how real it was. out in the streets.
You were out in the streets.
Out
in
the
90s,
streets. You know, he gave me that work. CDs. He gave me that work. He said, "Yo, check this out. This is gonna be good." I was like, "Game of Thrones. I'm not trying to watch none of this medieval kind of. You know what I'm saying?" So I put it in, and I was like, "Wow, this really has a potential to change generations and to be a hit show for HBO within the next few years to come." And
do you reckon there are any parallels between? This might be a wild question, and if you don't have an answer, that's fine. Do you reckon there are any parallels between Game of Thrones and today's politics?
100%. 100%. 100%. You know what I mean? Because it's all the Iron Throne. Everybody is trying to... You watch Game of Thrones?
No.
Ah, so if you, there's this character, no spoilers, Cersei, and, like, she's just ruthless, whatever it takes to be on the throne, do you get what I'm saying? And nobody likes her. Do you get what I'm saying? She's not likable, and it's kind of like so
she's
much...
She's Theresa May.
I hope Cersei can be. Like, Cersei is a real, like, I don't even know the word, but yeah. And I think Theresa May is right now, she's sitting on the throne, you know what I mean? She's in, King's Landing, sitting on the throne in the parliament, and people are just trying to be like, no, you don't deserve to be there. And she's just like, no, I'm chopping off anybody's head who disagrees, you know? So I feel like, yeah, right now, that's a good analogy.
I'm happy for you that you managed to do that.
Don't worry, we'll keep it. Next week you can pick the theme. It's cool, it's cool.
So we are joined by two really, really epic human beings. As you know, every single time we come here, we are joined by amazing guests who don't just come with their excellence, but they also bring an item with them. So our first guest is Caitlin Scarlett, and we're also joined by Caleb Femi. Thank you so much, you both, for being here.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely wonderful to see you both.
Thank you. Thank
glad
you.
To be here.
Yeah.
Caitlin, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hey, I'm Caitlin.
Nice. All the way from hailing all the way from West London today.
Yep.
So what do you do, Caitlin?
I'm a musician, so I write songs and I also release my own songs as an artist as well.
I saw two of your videos before I came. I really like them, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, yeah. Do you direct your videos as well?
Yeah.
I can see the consistency because there's kind of, I guess, more so with new artists, there's kind of like themes. I guess you're trying to tell a story from not necessarily the narrative, but the texture and the way each video kind of looks.
Yeah, there's definitely like a congruent aesthetic to it.
Yeah, that's what
I like that word, congruent. Yeah, what does congruent
jot
mean?
That down.
It means that everything is sort of it's smooth and it all is the same and you can keep
so, like,
consistent,
coherent.
Really. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I've learned a thing today. Do you know what? There's a fun fact I read about you that you worked with Idris Elba.
Oh my God! Where did you read that?
Girl, so
there was like a list of her. Like, she worked with Beyonce's producer. Is this what I'm?
That wasn't Die. That was Mello.
Oh yeah
Mello.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That was all the fact. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, so I've actually known him since I was 18. That's really weird.
Idris Elba.
Oh no, not Idris, no.
Moved up from Idris.
She's just like Idris. Tell me more about Idris. Can I have his number? Yeah, no, I did work with him. So he did an album based on Luther, his character from the show.
Whoa.
So while he was writing a concept album, I did a couple of days with him in the studio. And he's a really cool dude. But too cool, really. He made me scrambled eggs.
Really?
He made you eggs.
Good times.
How can they say he can't be Bond? The man made scrambled eggs for the artist he was collaborating with.
Hell yeah, yeah.
That qualifies
FIFA.
Him for Bond.
Care of you.
Played FIFA.
Played a bit of FIFA and ate some Jeez. Scrambled eggs.
Where was the
out.
Studio?
It was in like Camden.
And has a kitchen in
he's
it as well.
He's got his own, it's like this hidden thing and you go in and it's like a massive warehouse and he's converted it. Oh. Hey up. Someone's got a reminder going on.
What?
And who is it?
It's not me. It's mysterious.
Oh my God, it's literally me.
I'm so sorry. That was so great. Everyone's like,
do you know what?
So
do you know what this reminder is for? Wait, let me
what
tell you.
Is
this
that
is
what you
like, really
up?
Important. I'm so sorry. I've ruined the podcast.
It's okay.
But I need, okay, the reason I have this reminder is because last night I got in drunk and I ordered a Deliveroo. And I did that thing of accidentally ordering from something that doesn't open until the next day. But it went through. So right now, someone's going to be trying to deliver a cheeseburger to my house.
Oh,
and
no.
I set that alarm to remind myself to call customer service.
Oh, to stop
and
this.
Cancel it. I can't because I'm here doing the podcast.
Oh,
so one of my housemates is about to have a free cheeseburger.
And I get them
sorry
to redirect it. They can redirect it here. I'll take that still.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Where were we?
So Caleb, tell us about you.
Hi.
You're from Peckham as well.
I'm from Peckham.
Can I introduce Peckham?
Oh.
I have a relationship with this guy, you know what I mean?
Oh,
you know
God.
What I'm saying? So all we are right. Now welcoming to the mic, the one and only. Step weighing in at how much you weigh now? Because I know you've been banging them weights.
My.
I can see the biceps. Weighing in at 80 kg. Standard that I reported.
That's actually pretty accurate.
I can tell the way I can see, man. Because last time you told me you were like 76 trying to get up, innit?
Yeah.
Just banging some whey protein and crazy.
I have no idea. Probably 11 stone.
Yeah.
Probably.
Weighing in at 80 kg. Standing at 5 foot. 9 if I embellish it a little bit.
6 foot.
Flat 5 foot 9.
Are you actually six foot?
Okay, you know what? I'm 5'10". I'm 5'10".
So you rounded it up.
And I've just rounded it up. But you know what? I've made peace with my height.
It's a good height.
Yeah, it's a solid.
And I heard a lyric today, Lil Wayne's new album.
Oh yeah, he's
said, I'm 5'5", stunting like I'm 5'8". And I was like, wow, like 5'8" is
it's stunting criteria.
So I was like, okay, at 5'11", 5'10", 6 foot. I'm all right, you know. No, you don't have to be 6'4".
We'll give him six. We'll give
I'm
him
all right.
6 foot.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah. Mentally, metaphorically.
Give that 6 foot.
Yeah.
With locks like Samson. You know, his hair's just flowing in all directions. I'm so jealous.
So Caleb's got 4C hair, for those who... for naturals, Caleb has 4C hair. And we were sat for a good half hour talking about our hair care techniques.
And I appreciate the advice as well.
Yeah, it was great.
You gave me a lot of advice.
It was great. I'm happy for you. You're going to have a great hair future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we discussed hair loss.
Nah, we didn't really discuss hair loss like that. It wasn't a thing. It wasn't a topic of conversation.
Feeling uneasy.
It wasn't really a
Sully's
conversation
got that
like
Homer
that.
Simpson coming.
I'm nowhere near Homer in any capacity. I'm not. Listen, I'm here to respect you and as a guest and appreciate what you bring to the table and deliver. Okay. So what item did you bring for us to look at, please?
I haven't even told you what I do yet.
Okay, cool. I thought everybody knew. He said his name. I thought everybody knew in it. You get what I'm saying?
Okay. All
Caleb,
right.
Tell us about the wonderful things that you do.
I am a poet and a director. Those are the two main things that I do. But I generally like to dabble in loads of other things. Photography, anything music-based, theatre. I like to write essays.
I'm a teacher as well.
The last essay that I wrote was about sex, actually. Was basically about mapping everything that taught me as a young boy about sex before I actually had sex. So whether it was in the home and outside of the home, and everything that informed me about my role during sexual intercourse, mm-hmm. and also who I am as a man, mm-hmm. and how I relate to the world and how I relate to women and sexuality, et cetera, and just how terrible it was and how better it could have been.
That's
if
so cool.
Certain things were put into place.
Do you ever see yourself turning that essay into a book?
No.
Why
no.
Not?
Because it's something that I feel like it doesn't need to be a book at the moment, because there's a lot of things within it that kind of have branches and I haven't really explored that. So I'm someone that like proper needs therapy. But I don't
do
go to therapy.
No,
I like.
What's your reason?
I encourage everyone else.
What's your excuse?
I was talking to my friend yesterday, actually, about this. Basically, I'm sort of hiding in plain sight. So I've helped like 5 of my friends. I've got like the directory of like therapists. I'm telling you, this is the excuse. So I've helped like 5 of my friends find therapists, and they have therapy sessions, and I don't. And that's what I use to hide in plain sight, because I don't.
But you're not
go.
Hiding.
Yeah. In a sense you're, that
it's not anymore. You just said
yeah,
it on not,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Ever since
you're
yesterday,
the one that's directing everyone to a therapist, and
people assume that I go to a therapist.
So what's your? You still haven't said what your reason is as to why you don't want to go to therapy.
That is probably the reason why. I don't know yet.
Do you feel like because I think what happens is. You get so caught up in like living vicariously through helping other people that you feel like it creates a false sense of progress
because
if you see the results in someone else's life, then your mind still creates that, I guess, dopamine of, I've achieved something, I've helped someone,
mm-hmm.
but you're still not helping yourself and that's not a good enough excuse. And 100%. I think, and I'm hotting you up, I think you can afford therapy,
mm-hmm.
and because me, I'm like literally like flying around like an eagle all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I make out time for therapy once a week, every Wednesday at seven, I go to therapy. And why that's important for me is because it makes me feel like there's someone I can check in with.
Yeah.
And because of the nature of what I do, you know, like what we do actually, because we're in a sense, we are entertainers, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Caitlin, I'm sure you can relate to this too.
Yeah.
When you're an entertainer, it means that to an extent,
your career is based on applause.
Yeah.
And so that means that people need to like you mm-hmm. or like what you're doing, or even both, for you to thrive. Mm. But the problem with placing your self-worth in the hands of other people, which is what you do as an mm-hmm. entertainer to an yeah. extent, the problem with that is that they get to decide how you feel about yourself. Mm-hmm. But what therapy does is that it puts the power back in your hands by yeah. reminding you that mm-hmm. regardless of what people think of you, mm. ultimately it's a projection of how they view themselves. So even yeah. if they like you and they adore you, mm-hmm. that's partially because they adore a certain aspect of their mm-hmm. self.
Mm. Totally.
And so therapy, I think, is something that we've got to prioritise more. Like, if you can afford to get the new Nike VaporMax or whatever, mm-hmm. that money can be put into two sessions of therapy.
Mm-hmm. There's even apps coming out now, like BetterHelp and things like that.
Yeah, or Happy Not Perfect or yeah. Headspace. But I still think nothing beats interaction with someone.
It's true. My mum's actually a therapist. I was raised by a therapist.
Oh, really?
No way, your mum's a therapist.
Yeah, oh, wow. So, like, firsthand have all the experience you could have with therapy and all of that.
So, like, you were actually, like, emotionally nurtured probably.
I was yeah, nurtured yeah, from a young
nice,
sapling.
That must be nice, Caitlin.
Yeah. It was nice, because I've had my fair share of bad experiences in life, but having a mum like the one I have has been a real blessing, and I genuinely don't know how I would navigate this world. She's always been really nurturing. She's taught me to fight with my mind.
Yeah.
You know, she did not raise me to be like, if a kid hits you, hit them back.
Really?
Yeah, always. She was like, you know, that's the most basic level that you can fight someone with, is like by using hands and fists that you got given with. Like, you're bigger than that, you're better than that.
The world would look different, especially politically, if a lot of people raised their kids like how your mum raised you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think what happens with society, especially with politics, is that it all reflects what the world looks like. So when people say things like, oh, it's because of social media and that's why this particular person got more votes, or if people say it's because of advertising and magazines and that's why this particular thing is scaring people into making a particular choice, what happens is every single thing that we're consuming, every single thing that is pushed to us, is a representative of what our society looks like, because if there wasn't a demand for it, it wouldn't be there in the first place. If people didn't think it was normal for this to happen, then such thing wouldn't be repeated back to us through storylines or narratives. The world would definitely look different if we changed the way that we speak to children about their feelings.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, when you grow up feeling like how you view the world isn't important because you're a little person, e.g. a child, what happens is that those feelings get dismissed. And what people don't understand is that a little person's feelings are a big deal. It's
that's
big.
Your
everything
basic
is big in your world.
For life is being written during those years. And my mum says that a lot in her line of work. She uses this expression, big things that happen to small people.
Mm.
And they will become your biggest burdens later on in life if you don't address them and actually really map them out. Sometimes you have to go right back to the bottom. It's like unpicking a stitch. Yeah, it's so important to get down to those big things that happen to a small person.
So on that subject, talking about little people, big people, and our responsibility to one another and our acts,
yeah,
what do you think as an artist, like your role or like your peers' role, is to be responsible towards your audience in terms of politics or in terms of like social awareness or responsibility?
It's a tough one because I think that art should genuinely be all bets are off, like nothing is off limits, and I think if there's any place to do stuff, try stuff, say stuff that isn't going to be like loved or widely accepted, art is the place to do it. It's going to be the safe space. So it's that kind of balance between pushing the envelope, doing what you want creatively, and also maintaining your social responsibility just as a person, and knowing that your drop in the ocean is a little bit bigger than someone else's. I don't think that they have a social responsibility to necessarily lead the way with certain things. If they feel like sharing their political views, and that's great. But what I don't like is when you start seeing a lot of the real world problems that we turn to art to escape from bleeding into the culture.
Like what?
Like right now, I feel like there are a lot of echo chambers forming, especially on social media, where algorithms will just feed you what you want, what you like again and again. And I see so many of these posts.
So for those who don't know, what's an echo chamber?
An echo chamber is just basically just a space where one noise is being reverberated, bouncing off of the walls and just bouncing again and again.
So the world looks like
it doesn't leave, it just gets louder and louder and louder. Yeah, and it's just it's not spreading any ideas, it's not changing any minds. It's just that thing of when you can sit around in a circle and you all sip the Kool-Aid and like hype each other up, and then you haven't done anything to like change the world, really. You've just sort of solidified your own beliefs. And I feel like a lot of that is going on, and that's the opposite of what we need in times like this. Like these posts I see on Facebook, oh, if you agree with this, then just delete me as a friend, just never, just stop talking to me now. I'm like, I can't believe that there are some people who might consider themselves activists that would say something like that. Yeah. That these are times we need to be really openly discussing. And if you're making yourself unavailable to your fans by going, it's this, and if you think anything else, you're wrong and you're bad, you're really starting to infringe upon what art is there to do, in my opinion, which is it's for everyone, and it shouldn't tell you what's wrong or right, like regardless of whether it actually is.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I used to have that very... It's either it's black, it's either it's white, it's either yes, it's either a no. Very like binary opinion or way I would approach certain discussions. And I think the key word is discussion. You can't have a discussion if someone's already decided on what they think. Yeah. And that is often shown in, you know, like loads of heated online debates, especially to do with politics, where people make it very, 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 very personal and say things like you said about, you know, if you disagree, then unfriend me now. What happens with that, I think, is that it doesn't create room, like you said earlier, to actually have a healthy discussion.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to practice that more, because as much as for a while it did work for me to be like, if you don't agree with me, then back off and stay away from me. What happens is it becomes isolating, because our viewpoints do shift. It means that you can actually use that knowledge to decide on whether you want to debate with them or whether you want to just say what you feel and not turn it into something personal.
Yeah, just plant a few seeds, because who says that you're going to be the one to do it and you're going to be the one to change them? You might be the sort of first... and the first trigger, that, and 10 triggers later is what that they start to shift their mindset. And it's really not up to us what our legacy is, but that true activism is to stomach someone that you don't like, maybe the opinion that you find abhorrent, and try and reach them anyway and not take any offence if you don't, because it's really not your choice. And that's what true freedom of speech is as well. You know, they always say that there's no law against being... can I swear?
Swear.
There's no laws against being a dickhead. And I think that it needs to stay that way. Like, I think that like, everyone has an absolute supreme right to be a dickhead, and everyone has an absolute supreme right to try and reach out to a dickhead and change their mind that day.
Even then, because, I mean, Caleb, you were a young poet laureate of London, meaning it was your role to kind of, like, connect with a younger demographic.
Wait, what does that mean, poet laureate?
Yeah, break it down for
What's
them.
Laureate?
Yeah.
So basically anything to... A laureate is someone who... engages with society, all elements of society, using poetry, whether it's by like capturing the zeitgeist of the time or speaking on certain issues. And as the Young Poet Laureate, you kind of end up working solely with young people. You focus on issues that affect young people, education, etc., etc. Yeah.
And I mean, I remember watching you. We were outside the Houses of Parliament, and they'd asked you to come and speak on, as Young Poet Laureate. And that is very, like, it was a very politically kind of charged environment, isn't it? So how did you feel like in that moment? Like, where was your responsibility, or where was kind of like your assessment to how much you can say and what you should say? Because I remember even when we was there, there was a guy talking around taking pictures. Yeah. He was taking pictures of people.
Yeah.
And he was going up to people and saying, oh, so do you believe in Black Lives Matter? Do you believe in this? And they're taking pictures, you know what I mean? And it was like, it was a very political environment, isn't it? So like, what was the mindset there in relation to this topic of politics? And as like we're saying, as artists, you know, as creating a wider conversation, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, there's always this, there's two levels of like approaching politics and art. There's the very like politically driven narrative that you can like infuse in your art. Or there's like this disguise of being like apolitical and like, I'm not really talking about politics. But I think if we see politics as basically the governance of life, then everything that we include in art is going to be political in some way, shape or form, whether it's reflecting the effects of political laws or the political climate, or whether it's speaking out against specific laws or speaking out against specific parties or whatever. So when I'm on stage or when I write or when I'm given a speech or a lecture or anything, I understand my politics and I understand the politics of the particular situation, the event, everything. And that sort of informs me in how I need to move. There are some places that you go for like an affirmation of like what you believe in. Yeah. And there are some places where you go and you open it wide for discussion and you kind of take a step back and sort of just say who you are. I think sometimes by the fact that I am just a young black guy on stage saying something is political before I even open my mouth. So yeah, I think generally though, I'm more interested in art that reflects the life and times of political climates. So which kind of like links to the song that I brought today, which is Giggs, Pain is the Essence. And for me, when that song came out,
Real South London,
Giggs is the president of Peckham.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I think that when that song came out, I think it was 2007, it really captured the life and times of like young people who were growing up in that particular type of working classness, because as we know, like working classness is vast and different. So that specific type. I don't know if this was something that was intentional, without Giggs knowing, that song was very politically driven because it spoke to the council estate politics of whether it was social, economic, racial, classist, of all the laws that we had put into place.
Yeah.
It spoke about education. It spoke about family units. It spoke about youth crime. It spoke about youth pain. I mean, like, the song is called Pain is the Essence.
We used to bang it in North London as well. Yeah. I feel what you're saying.
And essentially, that song captured the political... I think it's almost a time capsule. If you go back in 100 years' time, you go back and you listen to that song, it really tells you a lot about growing up in a council estate in Peckham. But also, it could be anywhere in the country, you know? And it really speaks to... It's really connected to the fact that it's music. Why is it that Giggs is doing music? What is it about music being this accessible, one of the few accessible things that young people can get involved with? What are the laws that govern all of that? How is Giggs even sustaining himself? Okay, he's talking about being young and not having money and not having opportunities, but then he's speaking almost retrospectively because he's now an artist. He's a little bit more grown and he's making money from it. But is he really making money from it? Because this specific life that he's talking about is stopping him from being on stage and performing with Form 696, which is also a political legislation that stops certain types of people making music or performing their music. And it sort of keeps them...
There's a legislation in place that stops certain people from making music.
Yeah, it's recently like been... Basically, if you don't know what Form 696 was, it was this form that every music venue had to fill out. And you have, before you like have a music live performance venue, you have to say... you have to say what type of artist is performing, what genre, and also who the demography of the people coming to see the show, and then it kind of gets approved or not.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and obviously, if you put two and two together,
yeah,
gigs.
That makes so much sense. The demography
that's coming to see him. So a lot of the time he couldn't do shows, he couldn't do live shows. And that's still happening today. It's been abolished, but then something else has replaced it, which is basically almost the same thing. So basically the reason why they say is to prevent stuff like violent crime happening at shows. So
right.
Prevent like knives or guns or just generally people brawling at.
So they recognise the power of music then?
They recognise, but then they falsely and...
They legitimise
They falsely link, like, music, especially black music, to this whole sort of thing, which is, like, which if you, on a grand scheme of things, you can, like, do a rock music show in like, I don't know, Shepherd's Bush. And
oh,
a
you'll
lot
get
of people...
Mosh pits. People die in them.
Yeah, people die. People come out with broken noses. A lot of people get hurt. There's a lot of drugs, probably more drugs, a huge diversity of drugs that you would get in those shows than in, like, quote unquote, the black live concert shows, etc. So there's it's skewed. So that in itself is very political. Like the music you're talking about is based on the law, is formed and shaped by the laws that has been imposed on you to keep you in this like working class poor situation, and then you can't even use music as a leverage to sort of get out of it because there are all these things that are stopping you from making financial gains from it, which kind of keep you in the same cycle of having to go down certain routes.
But I want to talk more about the item that you brought to us.
Actually, it's really cool because I was just thinking while Caleb was talking about the fact that he's got sort of a time capsule for now in his song, my song that I've brought is Woodstock by Joni Mitchell. And I feel like that's a real time capsule for the year 1969.
Woodstock was like a festival, right?
Yeah, Woodstock was a one-time thing that happened, the most out-of-control, well-known festival that ever took place.
Wait, what? Why was it out of control?
It was so oversubscribed that they began letting people free. It was on a place called Yazgas Farm. It was in America. They threw this festival, and it was a folk music festival. But this was at a time of when music was really everything in culture, and the Vietnam War was on, and rock and roll, and the hippies were, like, thriving, because that was the people's, like... reaction to what was going on the really right-wing side of things is that the outcry of, like, the hippies and folk music and that whole movement. So many people turned up for the festival. They were abandoning their cars miles up the road and just walking the rest of the way. I think something like 5 babies were born there.
I've seen the footage. It's, like, black and white. Lots of, like, not black and white, but there's lots of, like, old school, like...
It looks like ants. There's so many people that it just looks like ants. When you see the aerial view, it was a legendary day. And Joni Mitchell wrote a song because she couldn't attend for some reason or another.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she was really sad about not being able to go. So she wrote the song Woodstock, imagining that she had stumbled on Woodstock by accident. So she's walking down the road and she meets someone who's on their way to the farm to go join a rock and roll band and like be free, and then. It's a really beautiful piece, and it's political in nature, but she just sort of describes this feeling that you can relate to no matter what year you're listening in, of wanting to get back down to just a human, compassionate way of life.
When was the last time you felt natural, like that?
Honestly, I think it would have to say before iPhones really became a thing. I'm not from London. I grew up in just outside of London, but it's technically the country. It's very lush, and I did grow up in fields. I grew up with my like feet dipped in the river as a kid. So when that making that switch over to this like tech life, where like even your leisure time, it probably involves a game or a screen of some sorts. I definitely agree with like the simple childhood I was lucky enough to have, which like I've got a sister who's 8, a half sister, and she won't have it. One time I went to take a picture with her and she went, selfie. And I was like, what the hell? Who taught you that? So, yeah, I think that's the last time I felt really like that, was when I just didn't have that feeling of, like, even if you leave your phone in the house, there's that small piece of string that goes from your head all the way back to the house where your phone's sitting. Do you know what I mean?
That's
goes,
a good
when
metaphor.
I get back, will I have texts on it? Like, That feeling.
And the feeling that comes from that when you go and there's no texts.
Yeah, and, you know, all the high that comes when you go and there is. And you look at your phone and you could scroll, like, three times before the notifications run out. Like, we all secretly like that. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I think I'd much rather go back to a time before we were all hooked on that. And, like, we have to be now. You know?
Do you reckon politically the world would look different if we didn't have, like, social media and iPhones and the ability to see each other's thoughts?
Propaganda is real, and I think that it would be so different. I mean, I don't even think it would be so as relevant as it is now. Like, politics has never been so... Politics is as relevant as, like, pop culture.
But is that a
I
good
mean,
or
it
bad
almost
thing,
is pop culture. I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. I mean, the fact that the great thing about it is that people are engaged, people are informed. Like, I think democracy is coming to take new heights. The bad side is that it's easily influenced. You can turn things that should be real relevant topics into trends, which means that people will tire of them.
You trivialize them.
I feel like that's happened to the Me Too movement a lot. I don't I'm not 100% in support of, like, a lot of things. I think some decisions that really should not be popularity contests, but social media are making them into that.
Yeah, I agree with the point you made about, you know, even within the movement of feminism, there are people like trans-exclusionary radical feminists who manage to take up so much space, and that is really scary because they frame and shape themselves as women who are fighting for women, but then they don't seem to even be consistent in what they're doing.
No, I mean, they get the platform because they shout the loudest.
Yeah, they're recreating the same violence that imprisons them. You know, Jamie speaks a lot about it on Twitter, where he says he wishes that social media wouldn't have...
Oh, yeah,
get
rid of follow accounts and everything.
Yeah, follow accounts. And I think Kanye
that.
Was saying that
I
recently.
I disagree, you know, I can't even lie.
I think that people... We would make genuine decisions for once. Like, we would go back to having, like, personal taste that's completely not affected.
Don't you feel like that's romanticising it, though? Like, because
in
I feel like, as humans... This is what I said, responding to Kanye. Obviously, Kanye didn't respond back, but, you know, he's busy working on his album. But I feel like social media, the metrics we use to assess and validate ourselves, are kind of just an extension of what we've always done. So prior to that, as humans, we had maybe like we had like test results, you know what I mean? Or maybe we had like, oh, like you get I had a good list of things, but maybe like you get a promotion or you win an award. Isn't it all about the psychology of needing something that external that validates our achievements?
It's the dopamine rush.
I actually want to throw a scenario at you lot. Yeah, I want to start with Kayla first. So I was watching Nina Simone's documentary, innit, and she said that obviously she got very big, she got popular. And then what happened to her career? It went on a downslide because she started singing political music, because she became friends with Martin Luther King, or a lot of the activists. There's a lot of them I can't mention. I don't want to misquote. But she
James
said...
Baldwin.
Do you understand? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that in the context of the time she was living, it was irresponsible of her to make any other music. And then she said, then she'd look at the alternative of like Aretha Franklin, who was making more like commercially viable music and was doing very well. But she was like, I can't make any other music because it's irresponsible, because this is the conversation that's happening. Yeah. That's why she went, what's the song? The song about the leaves, Blood in the Leaves, you know, all those kind of songs. That was even a poem she converted. So what I wanted to pose is, as artists, do you think that in that situation, that was the right course of action? Do you think that's a responsible thing to do? Or do you feel like you're still discretionary? You know what I mean? You can live as somewhere like America where it's racially charged, all that stuff, and still make music that makes everybody dance and not feel inclined to be like, this is my responsibility. Because she sacrificed her career for that.
I think that there needs to be a balance. There needs to be, like, we can't... The thing about political rhetoric is that it's so tasking on you emotionally, it's such a burden mentally. So we need our Nina Simones, but we also need our Aretha Franklins. We need to have a balance because people need a release at the same time. We do need to understand that, you know, the political life and times that we're going through and the struggles, and we need someone to speak out against that. But also, we need to dance a little bit, and we just need release. And I think that the two go in great harmony. When they're done really well, it's really good to have that sense of someone who can, like, help you sort of get inclined or engage with the political rhetoric, but also, like, when life is just hard and you just need to sort of, like, put things to the side a little bit and just have fun as a normal human being who just wants to release their stress. So I kind of think that we need that. The problem is when we have too many dance, everyone forget about this life, because then that becomes counterproductive and we all go into this like sleep mode that slowly kills us. But then at the same time, when we enter this like, hey, this is what's going on at the moment, then it affects all of our mental health. Do you know what I mean? And we don't know how to sort of find release out of that. And sometimes I think a balance is needed.
So whose responsibility do you feel it is? Like the audience, like the curators, or
I think it's the audience's responsibility to look after themselves. So if you want to look after yourself, have an eclectic taste in your playlist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, we know that the industry sort of dictate a lot of what the average Joe listens to. The radio does the same thing. So a lot of the time, radios, which you said earlier on, all these stations and all these record labels have political links when you go up the ladder. Mm-hmm. So they have a mandate themselves that they have to sort of maintain. They don't want things to be too political because then it kind of makes them like the sixth or seventh estate, you know?
You mentioned something really, really important earlier. You said that we need to have our Nina Simones.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like today we have people who are embodying that kind of energy of Nina Simone? So they're not necessarily, you know, compared to Nina Simone, mm-hmm. or they're like Nina Simone in any way, but do we have people that are living up to that kind of role through their creativity? Like, are there any people you can reference in our culture now?
Yeah, definitely. One of them sitting opposite me.
Hey!
In fact, two of them.
How much you paying for that one? what about the fiver that slid you, bro? Come on, man.
In fact, two of you, like globally, you both do that, and you both are fearless and bold in what you have to say in regards to like young people and just, I guess, humans in general, or the specific like demography that you are focusing on. So I think that across the board in so many aspects of life, there are so many people doing it via Twitter. There are so many people doing it via the work that they create, and the work speaks for themselves. They don't really like to have too much dialogue outside of their art. I think there's a lot of people doing it. It's just, do we have access to listen or to watch or see their work, especially the younger generation? I think coming up, a lot of us are musical. Generally, our musical awakening comes when we leave school and we like start meeting different people, and then we sort of find out things and we're like, oh, wow. But it would be good if from a young age we have this like eclectic approach to like all the different types of art that exists in the world. A lot of it is class-based, because when I look at people in private schools, they were exposed to a lot more things than people in like state schools. Et cetera, et cetera.
As an artist, what do you think your stance would be? I mean, you're in this situation, you see all this injustice going around. There's different ways. James Brown did I'm Black and Proud, you know what I mean? But even that affected him, because people were thinking, are you trying to be an activist? Even though it was a happy song, you know what I mean? So what is your stance on that?
Well, I just think everybody has their role. And music is one of the only businesses that I don't think is based genuinely on supply and demand, because artists have to create whether or not there's anyone there to consume their art. They have to get it out of them. So I think whatever people are inclined to make is what they should make. If you have this bug and you cannot get rid of it about the fact that you need to say something, that's your purpose and you should go ahead and do it. But if you want to just make people feel good and help them forget their pain, or because, you know, most everyday average people, they are thinking about politics and they are concerned about current social events, but they're also just concerned with their own lives. They want to think about what they're going to make for tea tonight, whether the boy they like at school likes them back, whether their dad's going to recover from cancer, all those things. And they need art to get them through daily life and not just dictate to them what they should be thinking about on a bigger scale and their social responsibilities. And yeah, I think we need a wide variety of artists always, like Caleb was saying, like, keep your taste eclectic so that we don't form these sort of echo chambers. And if there are artists that feel a social responsibility, then yes, they have one, because they have one as a creative. Mm. They've got that thing that they need to get out. And I feel like music speaks through us. We don't know why we keep doing it. It doesn't feed us. It doesn't keep us warm. But every society makes it. Every society dances to it. It does serve a purpose. And, you know, just like a farmer's job is to, like, you know, farm and pick up the carrots and feed the pigs, if you've got something to say, and you should, you owe it to the rest of the world. But it doesn't have to be something heavy all the time. It can just be something that makes someone's day a bit better. know.
And can I just say as well, it's a bit mad.
Your point best be good, you know, because that was a nice point. You know what I mean?
No, it's more of just like, you know, we're in this like weird thing where people co-opt like political like rhetoric. And how many people, and it really doesn't go with their, like, and I think this is what brought up, like, a lot of cancel culture.
Can you explain,
like,
what you just meant, though, just for someone who may not understand?
All right, so basically, like, there might be someone who is politically charged in their music, but then in their personal lives doesn't match up with the things that they say in their music. So, for example, you might, like, talk about respecting women in your songs, but then in your personal life there's like abuse and da 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 da.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so and I think that's also like an interesting thing, how like they found like little bandwagons to jump on for literally just for gain and in their personal lives. Like nobody's I mean, it's always good if you're very political and then you put your money and your mouth in your songs, and then we can say, okay, cool, you're doing it in real life. But also, like, personally as well, like, are you actually doing it? That's also, because then what does it mean? And a lot of people become, like, disappointed and heartbroken when they find out that, you know, their favourite, like, artist has, like, turned out to be, quote-unquote, a fraud. I mean, I don't really, maybe a fraud is not really...
No, but I articulate what you're trying to say. Yeah, I think it's
yeah, but I feel like a fraud is a bit strong, because some we can all make mistakes, you know, and also some stuff can come up from your past where you're not like that anymore. So,
sure.
So, as you know how it works on Spoke, at the end of every single episode, we make sure to ask each other what we have learnt, because as much as we can go on forever about these really important discussions, ultimately, the most important thing is that we learn from each other. So, Sully, what have you learned today?
Well, Caitlin made a very, very interesting point about, and it's kind of, just, I'm going to be thinking about it for the rest of the day, kind of about when she was talking about her mother and talking about therapy, and she was talking about the idea of, like, raising a child, basically that social responsibility as a parent to kind of, like, empathise with your child's mental health. Obviously, we all think about it, but we're not really taken into consideration, like, in the context in which you said you grew up with, you know what I mean? In the context that you can grow up as an adult and still directly correlate, like, how you deal with experiences with your parents' upbringing of you at that young age. I know very few people who can directly correlate, like they can say who they are now contributed because their parents contributed, but not necessarily in the most positive way, but not as specifically. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that really, I mean, this is my first experience with someone.
Is that going to influence the way that you approach Nazareth, your son?
Of course. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's why it really hit me, because because he's starting to not drink his milk. He was up to 2 a.m. last night. You know what I'm saying?
Did you bring out the spoon?
No, I wouldn't hit. Oh, I would never bring out the spoon. I'm soft, but I was just, that was just a joke.
Please remain soft. Yeah, that's the best way to teach him to be soft too.
So it was very interesting. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's something that it may not be something, maybe it's something that I'm definitely going to be reflecting on for the rest of the day. So that's probably what I'm taking away today.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I definitely learned from Caitlin about Woodstock Festival. I didn't know what that was, but when I heard you mention it, there was like pictures in my mind of what I used to see on Tumblr of loads of hippies. And I'm thinking most of them must have come from that same festival.
Yeah.
So it's definitely taught me about, you know, at a time in 1969 where there wasn't any kind of social media, because I'm sure if that happened today where maybe someone would send out a tweet and be like, oh, meet me in Victoria Park, and then everyone talks about Victoria Park, it's different. But for something to happen like that on such a scale in 1969, where people couldn't even like phone each other or text each other to ask them where they are, it goes to show that there is a force that's stronger than us that can push us in a certain direction and can influence us to literally move our bodies to use our presence to support something. That's absolutely mind-blowing. And yeah, something I'm going to definitely think about in terms of even like concert culture and, you know, what we choose to support. And it's making me definitely question and challenge the things that I choose to leave my house to support, why I support it, what I see in myself that I see in that person, and those similarities, and just really unpacking that. So thank you.
Anytime.
What have you learned today?
What have I learned? Honestly, I feel more like confirmed in something, which is, I'm really pleased to see that there are other people, because how often do you get to have a genuine discussion this long and this honest and this focused? And it's nice to share the table with young people who can recognise some of the same frequencies that I've been feeling about the fact that, you know, I do feel like people are turning inwards when it comes to their opinions and sharing and converting other people into whatever that is. And it, I think I've learned that there's more of an opening and more of a hunger for open, honest conversation and acceptance of others and real activism than I internally thought. Because I think sometimes as a creative, you can tend to have quite a pessimistic mindset about the state of the world. But really, when it comes down to it, if you just talk to a person, look them in the eye and, you know, don't insult them or anything, but just honestly try and speak about something human to human, you'll get a lot further than you think, which is nice.
Mm. What about you, Caleb? What have you learned today?
I've learned that I think it's more like you in terms of more of, it's more of a confirmation and just a reaffirmation of the need to every once in a while stepping out of your echo chamber and just like speaking to people who have different views from you, and also just finding that balance between like, okay, I want to talk to you, but is it worth it before we jump into this conversation? Because you said something that was interesting, Chidera, about basically you need to understand where that person's coming from, understand their background, understand, you know, just how far in they are, and to sort of assess if there's actually any room for a conversation, any wiggle room, do you know what I mean, to swap ideas or to sort of like plant seeds in each other's minds. Otherwise, like, there's
not
actually,
every fight is worth it.
Yeah, not everyone is like, oh yeah, talk to other people who don't believe what you believe in.
And then it's like, if they're a redneck racist, I don't think I'm gonna spend my time trying to convince them.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's more of like the people in that sort of lukewarm area that I really want to start having more conversations with. A lot of the time, it's just, I just don't have the energy. Even people who like, who are like me, who are like believing in similar things to me, I don't even like talking to them because it's just like, mate, this is, I have enough time talking to myself about this and reading up about this, and sometimes it's just too much. You're just talking to the, it almost feels like this lullaby repetitive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's really awesome. Oh my gosh, this has been such an awesome episode.
Thank you guys so much for your time, your effort, your energy, and just your contribution towards this discussion.
Yep,
it's been a pleasure.
And
as always, Shadira, you know?
Oh, thank you.
Cool.
Thanks to Caitlin and Caleb for coming through today.
Yeah.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.